Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 136 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and I'm going to be joined today by a couple of very special guests to talk about one of the most scintillating subjects going on early this summer, that, of course, being the 2012 NBA Finals, starting Tuesday night in Oklahoma City at that madhouse that they call an arena. We have a very special panel assembled here today to discuss this. We're going to be speaking with one of our most regular FDH Lounge dignitaries, as well as one of our favorite recurring guests that we've had over a period of time. Both of these guys, again, they've been on the show, as I indicated, a number of different times, never on at the same time previously. They've both actually worked behind the same mic in New York, one of them much more intermittently than the other one, but they never crossed paths really there either. The most regular dignitary that we're having on with us here today, the very regular FDH Lounge dignitary, of course, our good friend Steve Callis, who, of course, is a lawyer by day and first kind of got his toes wet in this sports media business by working the sports slash law intersection. And to this very day, you can hear him on WFAN breaking it down. He's been on Mike Francesa's afternoon show talking about a lot of the big stories of the day over the course of the last several months. And, of course, SNY in New York, the big sports TV channel there as well. But Steve has used that as a springboard, and as those of you who've heard him on this show many times previously have become aware, he's gone far, far, far beyond that, his initial work covering the sports slash law intersection here. And, of course, he has also done some weekend work at WFAN in New York. He's been heard on a number of Sundays behind the mic there at WFAN, as well as Monday through Friday, noon to 2 Eastern time at our old stomping ground, the Sports Talk Network. And that is a gig that he has had for quite some time now, well over a year, and working the Monday through Friday beat covering sports talk of all different kinds, including quite regularly, of course, the NBA. That's kind of unavoidable when you're a generalist, as he has grown to become. So he's going to be on talking NBA finals with us here today, as well as I mentioned that he had been behind the same mic as another gentleman who works there quite regularly. That, of course, being Evan Roberts, the co-host of the Midday Show at WFAN, Evan and Joe. Of course, the other individual in that being Joe Bonino, most famous, of course, at least in my mind, for screaming me down in a clip that you can still hear on YouTube for the fact that I am both a Browns and a Dolphins fan. He didn't seem to think that anybody was entitled to have a 1A team. So that's Bonino for you. But Evan has been on repeatedly under much friendlier circumstances and is somebody that we really enjoy talking with. And we happen to have talked hoops with Evan on many number of occasions previously. And, of course, talking NBA Finals on this occasion is a natural with them. We've got one of these guys on with us thus far. I believe that is Steve we'll be starting with here. Good to have you on the other lounge. This is Steve, right?
Yes, it is. Thanks for those kind words,
right,
Rick. Always good to be with you.
Oh, hey, it's good to be here with you, Steve. It's always good to be talking the hoops. And let's get her started here while we're waiting for Evan to get in with us. Again, just taking an overview of the series for this year. This is one that, again, and not to put myself over, but I predicted this before the season started. OKC over Miami in six. They have, of course, the home court that's going to make it much easier to be able to do that. Home court has been such a big thing in the NBA Finals the last couple of years. They have, of course, lost to the eventual champions the last two seasons leading up to this. So there's a lot of arrows pointing in their direction, but I know that not everybody might agree on that, Steve.
Yeah, I'll be pointing in the other direction. I picked Miami to beat OKC before the season started, and I'll pick them in six now. With a few complaints, Rick, like this absurd 2-3-2 system that they've instituted for the finals. I just don't understand how it can be like that. Having said that, because 2-2-1-1-1 to me is fairer. You know, in the perfect world, nobody ever really talked about this, but in the perfect world, in every sport, in the World Series here, it would be just 7 one-game road trips. They go back and forth every game. You understand with travel, et cetera. I always thought 2-2-1-1-1 worked out better. I don't like 2-3-2 at all. And frankly, I agree with your pick on that selection. The 2-3-2 helps Oklahoma City, not Miami.
It certainly does. And again, and I was looking at the numbers the other day when I was preparing my column. People can find my preview column at thefdhlounge.blogspot.com, the same place, of course, that they can find this broadcast. In terms of since they went to 2-3-2, that it has been 20 of 27 teams with the home court going on to win the championship. And for anybody thinking it's a panacea, oh, well, if the team without home court advantage gets off to a quick start, if they can somehow split or do better, maybe they can go sweep in their own gym, only twice has that happened. So for a team like Miami saying, hey, if we can split in the barn and OKC somehow win 3-4-5 in our arena, two times in 27 years doesn't seem to point, particularly for a series as evenly matched as this one, to that being a very good chance for success on their part, Steve.
Well, I agree with that. And again, I think Miami is going to win, but I don't think Miami is going to beat Oklahoma City three games in a row in Miami. It's just too much to ask. Again, the 2-2 back and forth, you saw it in the San Antonio series. People who didn't really know, I think, counted Oklahoma City out after two games. Then they went home. Scotty Brooks made, I thought, the biggest coaching move in the playoffs, and you know what it is, Pabo Cephalosha on Tony Parker for game three after Parker went off for 34 points and 8 assists in game two, and that, frankly, changed the whole series around. Parker was just not Parker. He was okay, but he only shot 39% the next three games, changed the series. You kind of thought if you were an Oklahoma City guy like you were and I was in that series that they would win the two at Oklahoma City, and then came the big game five back in San Antonio where Oklahoma City got over the hump. But I think, again, had that been 2-3-2, I'm not sure if that would have been different, that series, but I think it would have helped the Heat in this series that's coming up, and I still think they can overcome it. But you're right, that's a big plus for Oklahoma City in the finals against Miami.
Well, in terms of that adjustment that you speak of specifically there, very, very interesting to me because in talking to one of our in-house hoops analysts, Nate Noy, who was a very strong proponent that San Antonio was going to finish off Oklahoma City. And I say that after I told you so because he had very good reason to think that, and particularly when they went up 2-0. But one of the things he kept coming back to was Tony Parker and that this guy's not getting enough credit for what he does. And yeah, I think that part is true. But, yeah, as you indicated, there was a means of shutting him down. And for everybody like Nate, who comes from a purist standpoint and wants to bash Russell Westbrook, and I do quite often, too, because he does play stupid on a lot of occasions, shoots the ball inappropriately sometimes, too many turnovers during the regular season. But clearly what we saw in that series is that he is capable of harnessing his sins, and certainly he's going to need to do that again in the finals.
Yeah, I think you've picked out the wild card. When you look at, you know, I heard some people on TV, the finals are all about LeBron, they're all about LeBron. I don't really think so. I think you kind of know what you're going to get from Wade and Bosch and LeBron. Of course, the question still remains, can any of them hit a shot at the buzzer or in the final 10 seconds to win a game? That's still an open question dating back to last year's playoffs. And on the Oklahoma City side, you know Durant is going to get his, and you know Harden is going to get his on a lower level, but off the bench. The wild card to me, and the series, I don't think it's all about LeBron. I think a lot of it is about Russell Westbrook. And I'll tell you frankly, Rick, that's why I picked Miami. Westbrook is a superstar in the making, but he's still shown to me a little immaturity. He's gotten better as the season has gone along. Derek Fisher, I think, has helped him tremendously, and I'm shocked. Let me be the first to say I'm shocked that you knew Fisher would give great leadership, but, boy, he hit some big shots in the playoffs, especially against San Antonio. But the question is going to be, can Westbrook keep his emotions in check? Is he going to have one of those 8-for-24 games where you look at the game and you go, you need to give it to Durant so he can shoot 24 times. Why is he shooting 16 times while this guy, no matter how good he is shooting 24 times? So I think out of the big six, if you will, the big three on each team, I think Westbrook is the wild card, and I think that these young guys, and I take nothing away from them, but these young guys in the finals for the first time, I'm a big believer, Rick, in climbing that ladder. And Miami climbed the ladder last year. You'll recall they had no preseason together. Wade was hurt the whole preseason except for 3 minutes. They started off 9-8, got it together, got beat in the finals to a team that had a tremendous presence inside with Tyson Chandler in Dallas and a tremendous matchup nightmare in J.J. Barea. I thought that's why Miami lost last year. Dirk was Dirk, but I thought that's why they lost. And this year, I see Miami climbing that ladder while Oklahoma City is also climbing it. But I think they have one more step to take, and I think this year in their first finals, with their three stars being 22, 22, and 23 respectively, I think it's going to be tough for them. I think the emotions are going to take over, especially for Westbrook, and frankly, that's why I'm picking Miami.
Okay. Well, I see you're climbing the ladder, and I think I'm raising you one here. So let me run this scenario by you. You've got Miami that ran through, let's face it, a glorified JV in the Eastern Conference and struggled in doing so compared to what Oklahoma City did. Oklahoma City knocked off every Western Conference champion since 1999 on their way to the finals, lost to the defending to the eventual champions the last 2 years in the playoffs, so got knocked off by the best team, really the same as what Miami did last year, except for Oklahoma City it was around earlier. So in looking at that, Steve, what do you say to that, to those of us out there that would perhaps state that Oklahoma City is a more natural candidate in terms of climbing the ladder, in terms of what they've already accomplished, notwithstanding the fact they haven't been to the finals yet?
Yeah, I would say this. Dallas, to me, was a non-entity this year. I think we even discussed it once early in the season. Dallas before last year with a guy like Chandler and Dallas after Chandler are going to be exactly the same team. That is, very talented team, big-time superstar, great player and Terry off the bench, but going nowhere when push comes to shove. I'm not at all impressed this year that Oklahoma City beat Dallas. The notion that Dallas was a threat to get back to the finals this year, to me, was ridiculous because, again, they put it together last year. I don't know what Mark Cuban was thinking, to let Tyson Chandler leave to the Knicks. And, of course, as a Knicks fan, I'm happy. That's a whole other story we'll have to talk about some other time, of course. But to let Chandler, who, of course, was the Defensive Player of the Year this year, and rightly so, and J.J. Barea get lost in Minnesota, I don't think they understood what they had, and I don't think they're a threat anymore. I think their window was shut, not because of age. Their window was shut because they let those two guys leave. And I'll throw in Deshaun Stevenson as well, who could always at least give LeBron some fits, not shut him down, but give him some fits. In terms of beating San Antonio, very interesting because they would have lost to San Antonio if they hadn't made the switch to Cephalosha. But even with San Antonio, as with Boston, you know what the knock on those two teams were, 66 games, they're going to get tired, they're going to get hurt. And I think the Celtics got a little more hurt and a little more tired than San Antonio did. But I thought it was a minor miracle that San Antonio was in the conference finals. They get all the credit in the world, I think 20 in a row, 10 in the regular season, 10 in the playoffs. But when they got extended a little, frankly, they couldn't win either. So is it impressive what Oklahoma City did? Yes. Is it more impressive than what Miami did? Yes. But Miami was here last year against a much better Dallas Maverick team and lost in six. And to me, that was their experience. LeBron's already been in the finals a number of times. Wade obviously won a championship when they beat Dirk's prior team. I think that was 2006. When they beat Dirk Nowitzki in Dallas a few years ago. So I think it's time for LeBron. And again, when you look at the ages, and I'm not knocking Oklahoma City, if they can keep those three guys together, they're going to be good for a long time. And by the way, Ibaka's 22. But LeBron, three-time MVP, 27 years old. Bosch, who was the star of stars in the last game, I think Doc Rivers was happy Bosch was throwing up those threes, but they went in. He's 28. Dwayne Wade with a championship under his belt already. He's 30. I think the time is now. If LeBron thinks he's going to make a Michael Jordan-like run, and I don't think he is, and you probably don't either, the time to start is now. It's not going to be next year. If this team loses this series, who knows what's going to happen to them in the offseason.
in terms of looking at some of the wild cards of this thing here, and really, ultimately, I think what happens between the ears is going to be the wild card in most different instances here. We talked about Russell Westbrook a little bit earlier, and can he keep his bad instincts and, yes, outright immaturity in check. Some other things here, too. Again, this whole debate that there is between Durant and LeBron about who's the best player in the world, the reason that I quite simply come down on the side of Durant is you pretty much know what you're going to get. You have to question that with LeBron. Are you going to get the LeBron of Game 5, or are you going to get the LeBron of Game 6 from the last round? So you have that as another one of these X factors in the series here. Coaching, you talked about the excellent job that Scott Brooks did of making adjustments in the conference finals versus an Eric Spoelstra who quite frequently gets tuned out by his top players. So how do you see some of these matters between the ears manifesting themselves in the finals, Steve?
Yeah, I think the LeBron-Durant matchup, which everybody is hoping for, I think it's a great one. I'll tell you the truth. I thought Durant was far and away the MVP in the league, not LeBron. I still don't understand. I think LeBron is the best all-around player in the NBA, but how can you give a guy who's got Dwayne Wade on his team? You know, it's kind of like when A-Rod was on the Yankees and he got MVP. You got three superstars. And, okay, we'll say two and a half. Maybe Bosh isn't a superstar. But how, if you go out every night with Dwayne Wade, how are you the MVP of the whole league? There were many nights when LeBron was not MVP of the whole team. I remember that playoff game, Wade scored 40. Well, what did LeBron have to do there? So I think Durant was the MVP. I think the LeBron-Durant matchup is interesting. I think you're going to get a lot out of LeBron. Believe it or not, I think LeBron has actually grown up. Absent hitting a jumper to win a game, absent these guys coming down and making a clutch basket in the last 10 seconds to tie and win, which none of them have done in their two-year history together in a really big spot. They still don't know who's taking the last shot. You know, it's almost like if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. Seems to me if you have two or three guys who want and can and will take the last shot, you don't have any. It was never an issue with Jordan and Pippen. Jordan was getting the ball. Maybe he'd pass it to Steve Kerr to win the championship or John Paxson to win. But Jordan was getting the ball. On this team, you still don't know. Whereas I think, absent Westbrook having a brain lock, when it comes down on the other end with the game on the line, it's going to be Durant. If they double or triple him, he'll make the right play. But I think Durant is more signified to me as the team leader and the MVP of that team than it is with LeBron, because I'm telling you now, you can see in the first game, Rick, 10 seconds left, Miami's down one, they've got the ball at midcourt, what's going to happen? You don't know, they don't know, you know, he might throw it to Chalmers for an open three, and I like Chalmers, but he's no Steve Kerr or Paxson when it comes to hitting wide open jumpers to win playoff games / championships. So there's always going to be the problem, I think, with Miami, because none of them, and it would normally be Wade or LeBron, maybe Bosh as a third option. None of those three has stepped up to say, I've made, I don't know, pick a number, 5 of 9 in the final 20 seconds. That has not happened. Now, they only have a two-year history. Obviously, this is the second year. But you can see it happening two or three times in this series. And I think I know what's going to happen if Oklahoma City's in that position. I don't know what's going to happen if Miami's in that position. And worse, I don't think Miami knows what's going to happen in that position. I also think Miami's going to need something. You know, it was Shane Battier the other day with 4 threes. I think as good as the top two are, and Bosch, of course, chipping in like he did, you need a Shane Battier or a Mike Miller who's been up and down for 2 years. You know, he had that wrist injury. He hasn't been 100%. James Jones, another guy who can make threes. Where are any of those guys consistently? Udonis Haslam had a terrible shooting year, has been better in the playoffs. Chalmers is okay from three, but none of those guys have stepped to the fore. Battier in the last game made 4 threes. You need one guy like that, in my view, almost every game. And on the other side, you saw in that one game what the bigs did. I mean, it was unbelievable. Perkins, Serge Ibaka, Nick Collison. I think Ibaka's the key, too. He's only 22. He's a beast. So I think you're right. I think there are a lot of matchups and a lot of guys outside the big three of each team who can really, as a group, determine what's going to happen. Will those bigs shoot 22 for 25? Or, you know, it was like a Phil Simms night we were saying in New York when those three bigs, the three tall guys from Oklahoma City shot 22 for 25, as Simms was in that great Super Bowl win. But they're not going to do that again, but can they consistently give points? Can one or two of these guys between Battier and Chalmers and Miller and Jones Can one or two of them hit three or four threes in a game? That'll be huge. So, yeah, there are a lot of big questions besides the big three on each team.
Exactly. And the name that we mentioned a little bit earlier, Derek Fisher, who, much like Robert Horry, has shown the tendency in recent years to not do anything of note whatsoever during the regular season and then hit a couple big shots in the playoffs and let that be the only thing that people remember. But when you think Derek Fisher and when you think of what he did, you immediately start thinking about that Lakers run of the last couple of years. So looking at it through the eyes of history here, what we have in this series, and as I pointed out in the column I wrote at thefdhlounge.blogspot.com, this is really unprecedented in the history of the league, especially the modern history of the league here in the last 20 years since David Stern really started pushing the individual notion of the players out front in front of the teams here. This would be as though Magic and Bird were going for their first title against one another, or if Kobe and Duncan had been able to play against one another in the finals, which they weren't able to do because they were in, of course, right, the same conference, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you got two guys going for the torch at the same time here. LeBron was supposed to have done it already. Durant is thought by some, perhaps including you, as maybe being a little bit early here at this point. And yet, in 2012, they've converged and really made for a heck of a moment here. That this really is something unique. And I got to think, Steve, that even though people think David Stern's gripping about a small markup like OKC being in here, that the overall star power is going to more than take care of that in terms of the ratings.
Yeah, you do have the two best players in the league, and you can go back and forth who's the MVP and who isn't. But I don't think Kobe's still up there, but I think the two best players in the NBA are playing in this series. As for Derek Fisher, I got to tell you, the rumors were rampant, right, when he was not going to be a Laker, I think he got released, and then would Miami sign him or Oklahoma City sign him? I thought he was going to Miami because they're not particularly really deep at guard. And when you look at Oklahoma City, you say, well, hold it now. They have Harden. They have Westbrook. Durant sometimes plays the two. I didn't think there was room for Derek Fisher. And not only, again, has there been room for him, the shock isn't that Derek Fisher went there and showed great leadership. The shock to me is that he went there. You're right. He's like the modern-day Robert Horry. That's a very good analogy because all this guy does is make big shots at big times. He's on the floor. Obviously, Scott Brooks has no qualms about putting this guy on the floor, him and his five rings. But I thought he would be a big help in the locker room. I did not think he'd be a big help on the court. In reality, he's been a big help in both places. And he could be one of those wild cards that we've been talking about for Oklahoma City after their big three. Certainly, to me, on the court, the surprise, and of course, vis-a-vis the Lakers, who's getting the last laugh? Derek Fisher's getting the last laugh.
Oh, yeah, and that's one of those pieces. The Lakers really went through a very curious process in the last year or so here of shedding pieces. They ended up having to get rid of Lamar Odom after he pouted after the failed CP3 trade, getting rid of Fisher. So, yeah, there are a number of things that happened that were to the detriment of the Lakers. But this one, obviously, to the benefit of Oklahoma City. And what's fascinating to me is the difference in atmosphere that Fisher has from where he's been to where he is now, because you've got Staples Center, indicative of the L.A. market as a whole. Okay, it'll be loud, it'll be raucous when things are going well, but it's a front-running town. These folks in Oklahoma City, and again, I've seen the notion online that this is really more of a collegiate atmosphere. This is one of those ones where you'll be seeing ESPN/ABC breaking out the decimal meter for those home games in Oklahoma City this week and, if need be, next week. And you got to think, again, that is going to be something that I'll take my hat off to Miami in advance. If they can get the job done, I'm not sure it can even be stated what they're going to be overcoming in having to do something like this. The pressure of the finals, of that crowd that is just so bloodthirsty and so loud, and something, again, more akin to collegiate sports or something where people are naturally prone to being so passionate and over the top, it's going to make for an incredible atmosphere. And again, something really, really huge for Miami to try to overcome, way beyond the norm, I would think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, again, when you talk about playing on the road, there's playing on the road and there's playing in Oklahoma City. I mean, that is a very, very tough place to play. And I think you're right. I think the collegiate nature of the town is a plus, not a minus. They're starving for their professional team. They got their professional team. I will say this, Rick. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Seattle in this whole thing, because I'll say about a month ago, I saw a thing, I think it was on ESPN. There's one of those 30 for 30s out there about how Seattle lost the Supersonics to Oklahoma City, where they became the Thunder. And it really was disgusting backroom dealing, where the owners of Oklahoma City said they wanted to keep the team in Seattle, and out front they were saying the right things, but behind the scenes, frankly, from what I saw on that documentary, and I wish I knew the name, I encourage everyone to watch it, it was pretty disgusting the way they got there. That has nothing to do with Kevin Durant, who, as you know, was a Seattle Supersonic and an excellent one. But I got to think that the people up in Seattle, I would think some of them are still rooting for that team because some of them are their guys, including Durant. But overall, I think it was a disappointing way the way they got there. But now that they're there, a very, very tough place to play. And, again, you can point to, and you have intelligently in your article and here, about why Oklahoma City can't win. And I'm certainly not saying they can't win, but I am kind of a view of this is the time for LeBron. Wade's already got one. This is his time. You can point to Perkins with his Boston championship and Fisher with his Laker championship. But to me, that's really not the same. Those guys are cogs, yes, but they're not part of the big three, where, of course, Dwayne Wade is part of the big three. And James has been to the finals. I think this is his third time now. So they've got a little more experience, a little more age, a little more veteran know-how. But I'm sure you'll point out that Oklahoma City has the athleticism and the younger legs. And, of course, that's something I can't dispute.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as you pointed out, you know, with the Seattle angle, a real dichotomy between the feel-good story of Sam Presti coming over from San Antonio, implementing a winning organization's blueprint there. They've done it the right way, but a complete dichotomy between that and the very, as you said, disgusting story of how this team was ripped from Oklahoma City, or to Oklahoma City from Seattle
from
as a Cleveland Browns
yeah.
fan. Yeah, I can certainly sympathize with these people. And I have to tell you, in talking to another one of our guys in the 21st Century Media Alliance, Ben Chu, who grew up a Sonics fan, he and I have a real agree-to-disagree thing going on right now. We see where the other guy's coming from. I have to root against LeBron. He has to root against the Thunder because they used to be the Sonics. And
right.
I think that's all you can try to do is try to understand somebody else's viewpoint. But, yeah, I mean, the hearts of a lot of people have got to go out to Seattle right now. Because, again, by the way, let me put in a plug. I don't know if this is what you saw on TV or not. You mentioned 30 for 30, so this probably wouldn't have been it, but there's a great documentary called Sonicsgate. People should go Google that. Sonicsgate is a documentary that gets inside the story that exposes everything Clay Bennett and his dirty dealings and everything about this entire story. And I won't hold my breath for ESPN, ABC to spend much time talking about this.
No, actually, you're right, Rick. I think that's what I saw. I think you're right. It probably wasn't on ESPN, but I think that was the name of it. And it is, again, I just knew from where I am in New York, kind of the outside part of the story and the accusations. But in that documentary, they really, to me, proved beyond any doubt that this was intentional from the get-go. They were going to take Seattle, the Supersonics out of Seattle and get them down to Oklahoma City. Behind the scenes, out front, they were kind of saying the right things. Yeah, I agree with you. I would strongly – I don't usually even watch that stuff, but I just caught it one night, could not watch it, strongly recommend it.
I've wanted to see it for a while, and, yeah, you're making me really think I need to do so, but certainly not before the finals are done because that might impede me rooting against LeBron in the finals if I were to do that. But, you know, it's been great breaking it down with you, Steve, and again – you're doing a tremendous job with WFAN there with some of the fill-in work you've been doing daily on the Sports Talk Network. People can catch you there Monday through Friday in the early afternoon shift. And always appreciate having you on with us, Steve. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you, Rick. We'll do it again sometime.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate that. Thank you all for tuning in. FDH Lounge mini episode number 136, our 2012 NBA Finals preview.